WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. You can guess by Francisco Goldman's name that he's from a mixed heritage. His mother is from the Guatemalan aristocracy, his father, a Jewish American. Goldman spent the first years of his life in Guatemala and grew up in a suburb of Boston. He's traveled throughout Latin America, reporting on civil wars for such magazines as Esquire and Harper's. He's a contributing editor of Harper's. Goldman's first novel has just been published. It's called The Long Night of White Chickens. It's a semi-autobiographical story about a young man's return to Guatemala, where he confronts the brutality of a military regime. Goldman returned to Guatemala as an aspiring young writer in his early 20s.
I was a fiction writer, and I wanted to, you know, be a fiction writer. And I was living here in New York and trying to, you know, having a very hard time providing myself with the time to write, because I was always just trying to pay the rent. And so I remembered that we had a chalet down in Guatemala, family chalet. I said, I know, if I can just make $1,000, I'm sure I can live there for a year and I'll be able to write. And of course, I was at that point, I was very sort of apolitical and didn't know anything about anything. And so I got down there and was astonished to find out a war was going on, and that in fact, the town where we had our chalet had been overrun by guerrillas and the police force had been wiped out. And so I couldn't stay in the chalet. And I ended up living in my uncle's house. I think I was like 22, 23 years old. And that ended up being, you know, the beginning of a 10-year immersion.
When you started returning on your own to Guatemala and you were becoming more politically aware, did your family's privilege start to make you uncomfortable?
Very much so. Very much so. There were all kinds of, but it's an extraordinary thing about Latin American families. I mean, for better or worse, because sometimes it makes us seem kind of insincere or something, family does come before politics. You know, this is the favorite famous example of the Chamorro family in Nicaragua, where you have, Doña Violeta is the president, and she has the two Sandinista children and the two anti-Sandinista children, but they get together and have dinner every Sunday, and nobody ever talks about politics. And I always wonder how much my family knows about what I write and all that, and what my opinions are. And it's just extraordinary how, in that very affectionate, playful Latin American way, it's sort of never alluded to, you know, except now and then in a joke, you know. For instance, when my cousin's ranch got taken over by guerrillas, somebody caustically said, that they were surprised that they hadn't seen me there among them.
You know? How did that joke make you feel?
You just laughed, you know. Guatemalans, I think the thing that's gotten them through all the horrors that they've had to endure the last 10, 30 years has been a fabulous, ironic, dark sense of humor that they all have.
Yeah. When you started going to Guatemala on your own in around 84, earlier than that?
Early 80s. Yeah, that was 1980.
Okay. This was a very repressive period. Can you sketch out for us the kind of disappearances and death squad murders that were happening then?
Well, back then, that was under the Lucas regime. I mean, the way this slowly, you know, crept into my awareness, because, I mean, the amazing thing about Guatemala and why, you know, metaphor throughout the book asks, does Guatemala exist, is it is so extraordinary how the most appalling things can be going on right under your nose, and you won't necessarily be aware of it. And if you want to ignore it, you can, because people who disappear don't make any noise, you know, and it just slowly began to, I remember just slowly you began to feel this, like, incredible fear, you know, especially among young people. You know, you just would walk down the street, and if somebody just getting out of a parked car, you'd see, like, whoever was closest to that car jump in fear, you know, because you never know. And the thing most shocking event that I remember, that sort of really woke me up with a bang, was the famous Spanish embassy fire, which was just down the block from where I was living in my uncle's house, you know, working on my New York City love stories. And that was when suddenly, you know, 48 Indian protesters came down from El Quiché, led by the famous Rigoberto Menchú's father, who, of course, I'd never heard of then, and nobody had. And they were protesting, you know, the massacres and the repression and the land seizures in El Quiché. And in order to, you know, gain the ear of the international community, they sort of went and asked for at least temporary asylum in the Spanish embassy. Now, of course, embassies are neutral ground, and local police forces aren't allowed there, but the Guatemalan army and police stormed the Spanish embassy, and 48 people died. I mean, everybody died. There was one survivor, young Indian, and he was dragged from his hospital bed that night and murdered and thrown onto the university campus. And suddenly, you know, there I was, and, you know, why were these people down from Quiche, and what were they protesting, and what massacres, and my God, you know. And of course, at that point, you just couldn't ignore what was going on.
My guest is journalist and novelist Francisco Goldman. His new novel is The Long Night of White Chickens. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is writer Francisco Goldman. Authoritarian regimes really know how to use fear to manipulate people. And I know when you've lived in Guatemala, you've seen the effects of fear on people who you're close to. Can you talk about that a little bit, watching people react differently to fear?
Fear in Guatemala, especially during the really bad years, it became, you know, the very air you breathed, and people would react differently to it. But it has all kinds of effects. I mean, one of the things about it makes you very melancholy inside. You know, it's really sad to be walking around being afraid of being killed all the time. You know, and I think that melancholy becomes such a weight that people either, you know, seem very melancholy, or it engenders this kind of hyperactive, also kind of franticness, as if they're always trying to, like, lift off from it, you know. It's where you get, like, a very, you know, a lot of, like, sort of frenetic humor comes out of it. And, of course, it has all kinds of incredibly negative effects on people, and that makes people suspicious and frightened of each other, and or it forces people into all kinds of forms of denial. Is another common thing. You know, people walk around, you know, pretending nothing's going on, and, you know, or forces a kind of heartlessness on people. You notice people get numbed, you know. There used to be such outrage sometimes at certain crimes, but they become repeated so often that, you know, people just shrug and go, oh, again. Oh, so they, you know, they massacred a bunch of pregnant ladies again, you know.
What did it do to you?
Well, oof. During the very worst times, it first of all just made me impossible to be around. I especially when I would come back to the United States, I was sort of obsessed, you know, and I was obsessed and very, very angry. When I was in Guatemala, during the periods where for various reasons I had reason to be just frightened whether they were actually going to do anything to me or not, I began to sort of waste away. I really did go from 165 pounds to 130 pounds in a matter of like 6 months, and had a tick under my eye, and very much like Roger does in the book. I did have a bottle alarm system set up so that if anybody tried to come in through the house, they'd just knock over a bottle. I remember when I got back to New York after that period, when I finally got out of Guatemala, my very first night back, I fell asleep, and my subletter was still in the next room, and they broke a glass on the floor, and I woke out of bed in a flash and ran to where my window would have been in Guatemala, and of course hit the wall face first because there was no window there, you know, and fell back, you know, onto the floor.
How close did you come to being a victim of government repression?
Oh, you know,
did they know about you?
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, I think they wondered what I was doing there before they, you know, I really started to do journalism. At one point, there was a very prominent, wonderful journalist and photojournalist named Jean Marie Simon, who was living in my house. We were very good friends. And a death squad did do a fake assassination on us. Of course, we didn't know it was fake till you know, it seemed very real. And the way we got away from that was by, you know, I mean, there they were in a Cherokee, you know, pulling out their weapons, and miraculously a bus went between where they were and where we were, and we ran along using the bus as a shield and jumped on the bus, and we thought we'd escaped very heroically. But when I went to the embassy the next day, they knew about it, and I remember the consul said to me, they could have splattered you all over the sidewalk like tomato sauce if they'd wanted to. That was what we call a heavy-handed tale, meant to send a message.
If you're just joining us, my guest is novelist and journalist Francisco Goldman. His new novel, his first, is called The Long Night of White Chickens. What's it been like for you to be exposed to a more Latin macho style of manhood than probably what you were used to from the Boston?
Well, actually, the Boston Irish Catholic was its own kind of macho, and in some ways more macho.
Uh-huh.
Sense of being disingenuous, it's sometimes terrifying. I remember I've always had this incredible problem where because I'm sort of mestizo-ish looking to the average Guatemalan, I'm not a European looking Guatemalan, that whenever I'm in Guatemala City with a girlfriend, they immediately think they have to try and hit on her, and once that woman shows that she's not interested, they feel very insulted that she might be with a darker Guatemalan. They never see me as an American, and so I'm constantly having to wiggle out of fist fights and big macho shows down there. It gets kind of dangerous sometimes.
How do you get out of it?
Well, when I'm lucky, the bartender comes over and protects me and says, leave him alone or we'll call the police. Or once I remember guys pulling up their shirts and showing me their pistols. Well, they sat there and sneeringly insulted me and my girlfriend, who turned them down. So she had to pick me up and sort of walk me out of the restaurant while I was, rigid. Another time I actually did fight back, I have to admit. And he was so drunk that I won. And the next day when I went in, this was my big macho moment. The beer we have down there is called gallo beer, which means rooster. And the waiter came up and put a free gallo beer in front of me and said, un gallo para el gallo.
Do you think it's funny or are you really embarrassed by having to get the bartender to protect you or your girlfriend?
I'm mortified.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I just went down with, I'm trying to stay away from those bars from now on. Another time, there was another kind of macho in those very same places. It happened to be the bar all the mercenaries hung out in. I think it was because this was, the Contra War was still going on. And this bar was actually called Soldier of Fortune magazine called it the main networking place for mercenaries in Central America. I remember one night I very indiscreetly said to somebody, mercenarios son basura, mercenaries are trash. And I thought I had said it softly I'd said it to some Guatemalan girl who I thought was being overly impressed by them. And this mercenary heard me. And I thought he was going to kill me. He turned around and he put his face right next to mine and he was screaming at me to come out and fight with him. And finally I said, no, I am not going to go out and fight with you. And he went, why not, you chicken? And I said, no, because you'll kill me. And he stood back and he just let out with this roaring laugh and said, that's the smartest thing you've said, buddy. And after that, he thought he was my pal. And every time I'd walk in there, he'd come and sit with me and act like we were... And I remember when my mother came down to visit me in Guatemala, I took her in there and introduced her to him. And she couldn't believe it. Here I was introducing her to these southern, Tennessee mercenary soldiers with their green beret T-shirts and stuff.
In just a couple of seconds, because that's all the time we have, what's Guatemala like now when you go there?
Very sad. I mean, we were just there. I just came back from Guatemala a few weeks ago. There's a lot of interesting things going on, but 87% of the population is living below what the UN defines as a poverty line. That top 13% is just getting richer and richer. It's displaced Panama, it seems, as a drug transshipment point. You see lots of like you used to in Panama City, money laundering sorts of banks springing up. But at the same time, human rights violations are also continuing. There's a few noble efforts to resist that. I think you've probably heard the story of the American nun, Diana Ortiz, who was abducted and raped and tortured in Guatemala and miraculously escaped. And she has very bravely gone down to Guatemala to try and press charges. And they're having a kind of a what they would like to be a mock show trial. And they're trying to completely discredit her, but she is brilliantly and bravely persisting in trying to, you know, get the truth out. And also, I think a very important thing to remember about Guatemala, particularly in this year, 1992, is that it is 60% Maya. And for all the things that are going to be said about the conquest and everything this year, there's a country where, despite having enduring, you know, every horror and attempt to conquer them, the Mayas have survived and are really ready to, you know, become 21st century Native Americans and have a very strong culture. And if there's anything positive about Guatemala, it is just that.
Francisco Goldman, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Francisco Goldman is the author of the new novel, The Long Night of White Chickens, published by Atlantic Monthly Press. This is Fresh Air.